In the race to locate the lost ark, Indiana Jones's rivals were excavating like crazy, but in the wrong place. Why? Because they were using the wrong measurements, and they didn't know it. Hello there, I'm Dennis Barnard of Green River and HR Means Business. I want to talk about measuring HR's performance in the organization. I was once told that HR needed to justify its existence in the company. My reply was that if the board didn't know the value of HR, why did they continue to employ them? You can see what a popular guy I was. Measuring the value of HR has always been a tricky business. At first it was said, you can't really measure what we do, a view that was dismantled when Drucker's "You can't manage what you can't measure" became widely accepted. So then a series of indicators were adopted, which still only yesterday I saw being used in some respected websites. Time doesn't actually allow me to go through all of them, but I'd like to consider some of these with you. The first group is time since last promotion, revenue per employee, time to hire and cost per hire. Well, I'd contend that HR has very little input to any of these, as senior and line management have this very much under their influence. The second group of measures is training days per employee year on year, total training spend year on year, and absenteeism. These figures taken in isolation don't tell any story at all. If absence goes up due to a flu epidemic, is that a reflection on HR? Constant odd days of absence could, however, indicate a poor manager flagging up a development need. Training days and spend mean nothing if not supported by information on how effective they are. The stats in this group may relate to policies introduced by HR, but it's line managers that have to make them work. The third set of measures is engagement rating and employee turnover. These two actually depend on many other factors. Poor managers and directors, uncompetitive salaries, geographical location, and general uncertainty about a company's future will affect these. HR may advise, but ultimately the big decisions are taken elsewhere. So HR can hardly claim credit or discredit for what comes out. And finally, two more. The first is HR to employees ratio. Well, I don't know what this actually tells us. HR will normally try to benchmark with other organizations without knowing what actually goes on under the surface there. But that again is a topic for another day. The second is effectiveness of HR software, and that's something I'll come on to in a moment. So, let me introduce a few metrics which at least have a direct line of sight to HR responsibilities, and I guarantee you'll almost never see these in any array produced by the HR profession. We'll start with my now pretty well thumbed laws of HR tech. Law one is HR will take responsibility to ensure that their organization has an HR system configurable to meet its process and information needs. Second is HR will be responsible for the accuracy and timeliness of information held in the system, providing a single source of truth and real-time reporting. And finally, HR system information will be freely available and in required formats to all in the organization authorized to have access to this information. If you add to that the ongoing return on investment on the current HR software application, you'll then find that your application for funds to acquire the system will give you the answer. Check if it's still the gift that keeps on giving, or if it ever gave in the first place. So much for HR tech, and if you honestly can say you've got them all in place, you're doing really well. In fact, better than most. So, moving along, some more measures. How about these? The number of compromise agreements drawn up with the knowledge of HR to cover up management failures. The number of dismissals dressed up to look like redundancies and their money value in excess of agreed or statutory norms. The number of tribunal cases paid out to go away and the cost of doing that. Anything above zero in this group should be a real cause for concern. Let's be honest, none of those things should be happening. We abandon our values for the sake of expediency. Expediency being our jobs, the mortgage, and the other stuff dependent of staying employed. And once you start, there's actually no end to it. Another measure, the annual amount of legal advice fees incurred by the HR department. Has anyone ever stopped to say, hang on, I've got four qualified HR people in this outfit. Why do they reach out to lawyers every time there's a case? How much are we spending when the expertise, in theory, should be right here in-house? Okay, and how many years that senior HR staff have been in post? This is contentious, I know. But I believe, like any job, there's a limit to effectiveness. And if there's a knowledge transfer, then it's time to move on. I'd wonder at what ongoing challenges would confront a head of HR 365 days a year for 5 years in the same organisation, assuming they were working effectively. As I said, contentious. But how many seniors of HR are resting and vesting, freewheeling and racking up pensionable years? Another measure of mine, percentage of identified individual development needs that have been fulfilled within a specified period. This should reflect a structure put in place by HR and monitored automatically by the HR system. The ongoing development of the workforce where necessary is a business priority for any organisation. This figure should be 100% or close. These are some of my ideas and they won't be agreed by everybody, but it's up to us in HR to stop senior management digging in the wrong spot and give them the true measures instead. This has been Dennis Barnard, and thanks for listening. See you next time.